If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We are back with another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. Shout out to our presenting sponsors, starting with Gerritsen and Toth. They handle the most complex felony, federal, or state criminal defense cases. You'll find they've been doing that successfully, helping criminal defendants all over the Kansas City area and Northeast Kansas for years. Also, a shout out to Active Family Chiropractic. If you're dealing with any neck, back, shoulder, or any type of pain, go in today and schedule an appointment. Their office is located on 135th and Antioch in Overland Park, Kansas. Or just give them a call at 913-681-6013. That's 913-681-6013. Stop dealing with those pains that keep you up at night and call Active Family Chiropractic today. After having basically three off days in a row, having the off day on Thursday, being rained out Friday, and being rained out Saturday in Baltimore, the Royals finally were back in action on Mother's Day for a doubleheader against the Baltimore Orioles, where they split with the O's after winning Game 1 6-4, scored two in the ninth. After there was two out and nobody on, Scott Barlow came on in the bottom of the ninth, got the save. Zach Greinke once again with another strong start, 5 2/3, only two earned runs, three strikeouts, no walks. He did allow 10 hits, but the one thing with Zach Greinke is you know that he can pitch very effectively with guys on base. Colin Snyder came on, worked an inning in a third, but did allow two earned runs on three hits. Taylor Clark, who's been just dynamite for the Royals this year out of the bullpen, not getting talked about enough. He went a scoreless inning with one strikeout, and then, of course, Barlow did have some trouble in the bottom of the ninth, but was able to secure his second save of the season as the Royals took Game 1, 6-4. The notable numbers from the first game on Sunday, Edward Olivares was 1-for-2 with an RBI. He did leave the game early after his RBI single, which put the Royals on the board. It was a quad strain for him, which has now placed him on the 10-day IL. Andrew Benintendi with another two-hit game. He was 2-for-4 with an RBI. Salvador Perez finally snapped his skid of an 0-for-24. He was 2-for-5 in Game 1 with another RBI. Ryan O'Hearn was 0-for-3 in the cleanup spot. Hunter Dozier was 1-for-4. Whit Merrifield was 0-for-4. Bobby Witt Jr. had a two-hit day. Same with Kyle Isbell. Nicky Lopez was hitless in Game 1. So the Royals were able to take the first game in Baltimore and in that doubleheader. But in Game 2, it was another game for Kansas City where it just got out of hand in the first inning. So after going scoreless in the top of the first, an easy 1-2-3 for Baltimore ace Bruce Zimmerman, Daniel Lynch and MJ Melendez simply were not on the same page. And Daniel Lynch, despite being probably the third most trustworthy starter in this rotation, he just didn't really have his best stuff. And one knock on Daniel Lynch for his, I guess, solid as he's been to start the season, is that his pitch count rises very quickly. He's got a lot of 20-plus pitch innings. He's had some 30-plus pitch innings, and it's the reason that he was only able to go 3 2/3. He struck out 5, walked 4, walked Chris Owings, former Royal, and the 9-hole hitter 3 times in the game. It was the first time Chris Owings had 3 walks in a game as a big league player. But he only allowed 2 earned runs. Now, I mentioned him and MJ Melendez were not on the same page. MJ Melendez had a passed ball. Dropped the ball when he was trying to throw down to second. Just mixed up from time to time in the first inning, and that cost him. That cost him 3 runs. Now the Royals bounced back in the top of the second, did add a run on a sac fly by Whit Merrifield, but only got 1 other run for the rest of the game, and that was thanks to an RBI single by Hunter Dozier. But Bobby Witt Jr. at the top of the order, which now looks to be his spot, probably will be the leadoff man for the next couple weeks would be my guess, because Edward Olivares is out. They're not going to put Whit Merrifield back up at the top down unless he starts hitting in the 5-hole. But Bobby Witt Jr. yesterday at the leadoff spot was 0 for 4 with a strikeout. Andrew Benintendi was 0 for 4 with two strikeouts. Salvador Perez, who had another two-hit game, was solid in the three-hole, average now up to 192 on the season. Hunter Dozier had two hits. He was 2 for 4 with an RBI. Whit Merrifield was 0 for 3. Emmanuel Rivera, who started at third yesterday. Bobby Witt Jr. was at shortstop in game two. He was 2 for 4. MJ Melendez had his first major league double. He was 1 for 3. Michael A. Taylor and Kyle Isbell, though, were a combined 0 for 6. Yoel Piamps and Dylan Coleman both pitched out of the bullpen following Daniel Lynch. Piamps went an inning in a third, allowed one earned run on three hits. Dylan Coleman worked a scoreless inning, struck out one, walked one. And Gabe Spire, who, like Taylor Clark, not getting talked about enough. He still has not allowed a run this season. He went two scoreless innings, struck out one, and allowed only one hit. Now, they're back in action today. A little bit of an odd scheduling conflict because of the rainouts. The Royals will play here in under an hour. They will play the Game 3, the rubber match, and the series finale in Baltimore at 11:05 a.m. Central Time. Carlos Hernandez will take the bump, going for his first win of the season, and Tyler Wells will go for the Baltimore Orioles. He is 0-2 with a 4.50 ERA. The lineup has been announced for Kansas City as well. Bobby Witt Jr. back at the top of the order. He will lead off and play third base. Andrew Benintendi in the two-hole playing left field. Salvador Perez hitting third and DHing. We'll get to this right after I get to the lineup. Ryan O'Hearn batting cleanup at first base. Hunter Dozier in right field. He'll hit fifth. Whit Merrifield hitting sixth at second base. Batting seventh and catching, MJ Melendez. Batting eighth and manning center field will be Michael A. Taylor. And rounding it out and batting ninth and playing short, it will be Nicky Lopez. So though the Royals didn't do anything spectacular yesterday, and they're still 9-16 on the year, they've made probably the most questionable move that I can think of this season. You know, aside from the Royals playing poorly, two of the guys in the rotation being wildly inconsistent, the bullpen still kind of trying to find out who works where, the biggest head-scratcher I can think of to this point by Mike Matheny is batting Ryan O'Hearn in the cleanup spot. Now, I understand there are some other circumstances that had to happen. You know, Carlos Santana went to the IL with right ankle bursitis. But at the same time, when you wanted to get Ryan O'Hearn at bats, I get it, right? He's somebody already on your roster. He's on the active roster. You need somebody to play first base or to DH. But Ryan O'Hearn has a negative 10 WRC+. If you want to keep Ryan O'Hearn in the lineup, I can understand it. I can understand why maybe early on in the year you don't want to turn to somebody else maybe in the minor leagues. Yes, I'm talking about Vinny Pasquantino. Ryan O'Hearn, though, has no business hitting cleanup for the Kansas City Royals, hitting cleanup for anybody for that matter. Because the cleanup spot, if you're trying to be righty-lefty, righty-lefty, there's still other pieces you can go with. I mean, there's a reason right now the Royals' offense is struggling. I mean, their top contributors just simply aren't hitting. Whit Merrifield has the lowest average of any player in Major League Baseball with 100 at-bats. Salvador Perez is hitting sub-200. His OBP is lower than it's ever been. You know, Carlos Santana wasn't hitting for a while. Hunter Dozier wasn't hitting. Nicky Lopez has slumped a little bit. Andrew Benintendi is the only everyday starter that's really, truly hitting the ball. Now, Bobby Witt Jr., he did get hit hot, an 11-game hitting streak, that is. But still, I'm not putting all the pressure on a 21-year-old rookie. But Ryan O'Hearn in this spot simply just makes no sense to me. There's not one argument, not one point you could make where it makes sense. I have not found one person out there that has defended the idea of hitting Ryan O'Hearn cleanup. Now, the one, I guess, not even an argumentative point, just something people are saying about why the Royals are doing this is they feel like, you know, this is Ryan O'Hearn's last chance to maybe stay on the roster. You need to see what you have in Ryan O'Hearn. Is he a part of the future? I mean, if we're still at this point that we're trying to find if Ryan O'Hearn can be an everyday player, the Royals are 5 or 6 years off of contending. And when I mean contending for a wild card spot. I'm not trying to be overdramatic, but the Royals have certain guys in this lineup that you need to see what they have, and it's guys like Kyle Isbell. It's guys like Edward Olivares. It's guys like Emmanuel Rivera. Ryan O'Hearn has been on this roster at the big league level since 2018. You have tried this same charade over and over and over again. He's had his chances. Now, Ryan O'Hearn, never met the guy. I'm sure he's a great guy. I do hope the best for him. But in Kansas City, I mean, if you play this game with a lot of guys, Ryan O'Hearn's not the only one, by the way. He is not the first Royal that Kansas City just given everyday at-bats to and in significant spots just to see what they got in him. I mean, Ryan O'Hearn's no spring chicken either. He's no 22 or 23-year-old. If that was the case, I'd be all for Ryan O'Hearn hitting cleanup. But he's also blocking two first basemen down in AAA that are hitting well. Now, Nick Prado's on the IL. And Vinny Pasquantino has the highest OPS of anybody in AAA. He has six home runs. His WRC plus is north of 140. I mean, there's zero reason 24-year-old Vinny Pasquantino is in AAA anymore. I don't care that it's May. You want the Royals to be fun? That's the way you do it. If Ryan O'Hearn's hitting cleanup and not producing, it's another thing, too. If Ryan O'Hearn's hitting well, or he goes out today and hits well, I mean, it still doesn't solve the problem because Ryan O'Hearn is a stopgap guy. He is just a guy you are filling in at this spot for hopefully not much longer before you feel confident in bringing up either Vinny Pasquantino or Nick Prado. What concerns me and why I have a lot of questions for the front office is you made the move to bring up MJ Melendez when Cam Gallagher got hurt. And MJ Melendez is supposed to be your everyday catcher a year or two from now. And when Cam Gallagher went down, you still have Salvador Perez. So they could have brought up Sebastian Rivero. They could have brought up Freddie Fermin and just said, well, here's our backup catcher till maybe Cam's back in a month or two. They went with MJ Melendez, who wasn't hitting well in AAA. So my question is, why when your starting first baseman went down with an injury, you didn't make the move to bring up somebody that was succeeding in AAA, somebody that was hitting well? And again, we don't think it's affecting Vinny Pasquantino that he's probably looking up at the big league level and going, man, that was kind of my gateway right there. Carlos Santana got hurt. I'm hitting well. I'm not a 20-year-old. I am a couple years younger than Ryan O'Hearn, and the Royals say, well, we're going to give Ryan O'Hearn this spot. Not only this spot, he can play first base, he can hit cleanup. I mean, the Royals simply aren't having any solution to their flaws right now. Ryan O'Hearn's not the fix. Emmanuel Rivera's not the fix. Now, with Edward Olivares going to the IL, they made the move today to call up Sebastian Rivero, so they have three catchers on the roster. But here's the thing with that is Sebastian Rivera was already there yesterday from the taxi squad because of the doubleheader, so they probably just make that move, and then tomorrow, or not even tomorrow, maybe later on today, the Royals do make a move where they can send Rivero back down because you don't need three catchers on the roster, and maybe it is time for Vinny Pasquantino. Or maybe it's going to be, hell, Brady Singer. It might be that. It might be Brady Singer coming up because Chris Bubich is still at the big league level and going to be pitching out of the bullpen. I just don't know. I don't know where these ideas are coming from and why the Royals are operating this way. It's not to say that Vinny Pasquantino is this by far and away superstar, all-star level first baseman right off the bat. I mean, he's probably going to struggle when he first comes up. And maybe the Royals' hesitancy is going, well, we don't want three rookies in the lineup manning catcher, first base, and third base. But do we feel much better with saying, well, we don't want Vinny Pasquantino to come up and struggle? I mean, you're putting a guy at the cleanup spot that has a negative WRC+. That's the solution? That's the answer to all the problems? I mean, these decisions that are being made less than 30 games in the season just can infuriate you. Because no, we don't work in the front office. No, we don't have scouts all around us here at the building that are constantly checking in on these players. But I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to know that what the Royals are doing with their lineup isn't working. There has to be changes made. There has to be roster moves made. And not big ones at that. I don't think bringing Vinny Pasquantino up to the major league roster is this shocking and potential detrimental move to the Royals season. You're 9-16. 9-16. If the Royals were 16-9, 17-9, but they needed some boost, and you think maybe it's down in AAA, but you don't want to shake up the chemistry. I mean, there's clearly not much chemistry going on. And I'm sure all the players are close, but 9-16 can tell a lot that they're simply just not playing well. And we saw the first time MJ Melendez came up in Kansas City, made his debut at Kauffman Stadium against St. Louis. The Royals had a season high in runs. They had a season high in hits. There is something that sparks a team when there's energy like that. And if the Royals have three rookies in the lineup, would you not want to tune in every single night? Because those are the guys that you can look at and say, they're going to be, if the Royals will contend. There's obviously no guarantees in baseball of making it to the postseason, but I can look at Bobby Witt Jr. I can look at MJ Melendez. I can look at Daniel Lynch, Brady Singer, some guys out of the bullpen, Colin Snyder. I doubt Scott Barlow and Josh Stammen will still be around the next time they're contending because relievers have short lifespans. But some of those younger guys, Nicky Lopez, Andrew Benintendi is probably going to get an extension. You can look at those guys and say, man, when they succeed and when the Royals win, you feel good about the outlook of the future. But even if Ryan O'Hearn plays well, Ryan O'Hearn is not going to be a part of it because he's getting up there in age, and the Royals already have their future first baseman down in AAA. So what's the end goal here? What's the future plan for Ryan O'Hearn? Is it to get his production up to a level where you trade him? Are you just basically throwing away at bats at this point and saying, well, we're 9-16, we're not going to get much better, we don't want to make a roster move right now? I mean, this was what you kind of hoped with, or not hoped for, but hoped with the new ownership, a change at the general manager spot, that the Royals would maybe operate a little differently. And not saying it needs to change overnight. You know, you don't just take over an organization, a franchise, and say, here, we're going to do things my way. No, the Royals have already built a foundation in the way they do things, and I do believe that they put a lot of effort, and they try to turn this thing around. But there's a difference between trying and not really showing much signs of improvement. I mean, the Royals are on pace for 90-plus losses. And this was a season in which they were supposed to be far more competitive. And everything up to this point has gone wrong. I mean, a lot has gone wrong. Pitching development, offensive approach, guys that were supposed to be your weight carriers at the top of the lineup, they are putting up some of the worst offensive numbers they've ever had in their career. And eventually baseball is forgiving and also at the same time unforgiving, that when you're playing really well, you're hot, everything is an emotional high, eventually you're going to go through a dip and everything sucks. For the Royals, through 25 games, for the most part, everything has sucked. Aside from an 11-game hitting streak from Bobby Witt Jr., a 2-0 start, Daniel Lynch, Zach Greinke, Brad Keller pitching well, some bullpen guys pitching well, but a lot has been negative. And when the Royals continue to just stand by and not do much, not send any message, not make a move here or there, bring up guys that are deserving of being at the big league level. I mean, if I'm Vinny Pasquantino, I'm going, why am I still down here? Why am I going to continue just to show that, yeah, I can hit AAA pitching, and the guy ahead of me is not playing very well? I just would want to know what's going on inside the front office's mind when they look at that. Is it the hesitancy to not have three rookies in the lineup? I mean, you're not supposed to be a World Series contender this year, so don't you have to see what you got from some of these guys? You got to see what you have in Vinny Pasquantino. Because if Nick Prado is your first baseman in the future, where the hell are you going to put Vinny Pasquantino? You have to find that out. Can he play the outfield? Does he have to DH? I mean, as long as Salvador Perez is here and MJ Melendez is here, he can't DH. So he's going to have to learn a corner outfield spot. What do you have in Hunter Dozier? There was zero reason why Hunter Dozier was not hitting against righties so that Ryan O'Hearn could hit as a lefty. I mean, there's just no answer I can see with this lineup. There's no problem solving going on. And maybe the Royals behind closed doors, they're trying everything in their power, but certainly with the lineups that are put out and the roster moves being made, I can't say with confidence that they know exactly what they're doing to how to fix this problem. Because we've seen, not only in Kansas City the last couple of years, but when you watch other teams out there, Jake Junis started the other day for the San Francisco Giants, won 100-plus games last year, had the best record in baseball last year. Jake Junis was non-tendered by the Royals this year. Have any idea what he's done? Threw 10 scoreless innings to start out of the bullpen, and they thought, well, I think Jake Junis can probably make a start here or there for us. A playoff team. A team that's going to contend for the top of the NL West. He threw 5 innings yesterday, allowed only two earned runs to the St. Louis Cardinals. You think right now the Royals would probably like to have Jake Junis? The problem is, Jake Junis would be exactly like Jake Junis was in Kansas City if he was still here. It's going elsewhere, getting fresh starts, and seeing how quickly these things can change for guys. Jorge Lopez, though he had the loss yesterday in Game 1, Jorge Lopez has put up some very good numbers for Baltimore out of the bullpen. So much so, he was considered to be the fireman in the ninth inning. He was supposed to be the guy, or the eighth inning, that is. He was supposed to come in and put out the fire. Jorge Lopez was borderline the last pitcher you wanted out of the bullpen for the Royals when he was here in 2019. Jorge Soler, going from being one of the worst statistical hitters in baseball, traded to Atlanta, and he has one of the most iconic home runs now in the World Series. That moonshot he had at Minute Maid Park against Houston in Game 6. It happens too often. And the infuriating thing is that the Royals see that happen and go, well, we're still not really going to change our philosophy on that. They just got a fresh start. They succeeded elsewhere. Good for them. And you do want to see players succeed that were in your organization because you build relationships with them. You don't want to see anybody fail and ruin their career. And Jake Junis was probably on the doorstep of being DFA'd somewhere else, being a career minor leaguer at that point. Now he's starting for a team that's going to be in the postseason. Jake Junis was throwing out of the bullpen in long relief for the Royals. It's the same thing that happened with Brady Singer this year. They think, oh, well, we don't want to put him in the rotation. We feel like Chris Buich and Carlos Hernandez beat him out. So Brady Singer, yeah, you're going to throw out of the bullpen. Not only out of the bullpen, in long relief. So a meaningless spot. Brady Singer was coming on in blowouts. That's the only time he pitched this year were blowouts, either for the Royals winning or the Royals getting hammered. Why hasn't this philosophy changed? Why is it a continuation of the same mistakes they've made? I mean, you can just look around the league at times. Chris Owings, okay, I don't think he's much, but he started at second base for Baltimore the other day. I think for the most part, he's been fine. Had 3 walks. He was one of the worst Royals hitters I have seen in the last 10 years. I think his strikeout rate was over 50%, striking out more than half the time in Kansas City. But even before that, in Arizona, he was a fine utility guy. I mean, not hitting like a pitcher. But in Kansas City, sometimes things just change. Carlos Santana, you know, though he had a bad last year in Cleveland, he was banged up a little bit. It was a COVID year. It was kind of weird. We have not seen anything close to the old Carlos Santana. That may be a bad, I guess, comparison to use because Carlos Santana is 36 years old. He's not 30 anymore. But the Royals have also hung on to guys that they feel have been great success stories. Brad Keller's one, Scott Barlow's one, Josh Staumont's one, Colin Snyder is appearing to be one. The Royals are getting some of those guys, which is great, but it's also with the guys you have at the major league level and why some of them are struggling and not playing well. And the Royals, at least post-2015, made some roster moves or didn't make those that are now going to hurt them in the long run. Right, Whit Merrifield, I think one of the most underrated Royals players of all time. Super utility, great at the top of the order, led the league in hitting for 2 straight years. But what Dayton Moore in the front office did is said, well, we don't want to trade him. Now, there were teams calling about Whit Merrifield, and the Royals were losing 100 games at the time. But they felt like they were close. The problem is Whit Merrifield's going to be 36 here pretty soon, and it's already showing signs now that, yeah, he's struggling at the plate, but this happens in baseball. Father Time's undefeated. Guys can't be the same hitters that they were 3 or 4 years ago, and the Royals failed at that time to say, this is where we can cash in. I think nearly every other team out there, if they had a Whit Merrifield, he would have been traded in 2019. And it would have hurt because Whit Merrifield's a fan favorite. He's great for Kansas City. He's great in the clubhouse. He's a leader. But this is why tough business decisions always happen with successful organizations. I mean, I saw a stat yesterday. The Royals have the worst record in Major League Baseball since 2000. Now they have a World Series in that time frame. Some other teams out there, they don't. But consistency has never really been a thing for the Kansas City Royals. They have caught lightning in a bottle a few times, but these type of moves are the moves that have not been made. It hurts you down the road. Now, I'm still holding out hope that some point here in the next coming weeks, the Royals just catch fire, and everything I'm saying now is just makes no sense. Right? You're saying, well, you just didn't give them enough time. I'm not talking about this year. I'm talking about future seasons. If the Royals are trying to convince the fan base, convince the rest of the league they're contending next year, how can I look at what's happening right now and say, that's a for sure, that's a given? Now, you have to show signs of pieces out there. I think Bobby Witt Jr. is a piece, MJ Melendez, Daniel Lynch, Brad Keller. Zach Greinke's probably not going to be here next year. I can't say Chris Bubich is ever going to find a spot in that rotation. You're hoping Brady Singer's called up here either tonight or tomorrow to make the start on Wednesday. But I just want to see some sort of direction. You replenish this farm system. And you know what? That deserves a lot of praise for the scouts in this organization and the front office making the right picks. Now, not all of them have panned out, but they've jumped from being the lowest-ranked farm system to now top 10 in baseball. That earns some credit. But development's a big part about that. You can have all these scouts in Baseball America and Baseball Reference and FanGraphs all say, you know, these are prospects, right? These are top-end guys. At the end of the day, they have to be developed correctly, and they have to produce at the big league level. The Royals' development process hasn't always been super solid. And if they can't fix that or have outside hires, new voices in the clubhouse, I don't know how it's ever going to change. The Royals' biggest problem, I've said this probably 200 times on the show, it's complacency. They say, give it time, it'll work. Because back in 2014 and 15, it did work. When they were complacent, they said, we hear all the complaints, we hear all the criticism, but give us time, it's going to work. And it did. And the fear is that they're always going to have that philosophy. But in today's age, that just can't happen anymore. That doesn't work. Marco, I've been rambling on for too long, but you know the Royals so far, 9-16, they'll play here now about 30 minutes. You know, you're hoping they can at least win the series in Baltimore. If they don't today, that's about as bad as a weekend you can have aside from being swept. I mean, are the Royals a team that you have confidence in? Now let's give it a five-year window. That in that five-year window, you are just going to see a drastic change in baseball in Kansas City.
Yeah, I got confidence in them because what the young guys have been able to produce so far. Bobby Witt's now trending upwards after kind of getting that slump, but just a slow start to his rookie season. MJ Melendez has been pretty nice up in the lineup in the majors. He's DHing today. It's got to, though, at some point. I'm just surprised, like you, that O'Hearn continues to get the at-bats when there's been success with the young guys on this roster, and we've seen it so far from the batting and even to the pitching. But more specifically with the bats in the lineup, it's just surprising to me when you got a Kyle Isabel who was 2-for-4 in the first game of the series against Baltimore. Then you sit him in the second game of the doubleheader yesterday, and you keep O'Hearn for both games in the lineup. It's a big head scratcher. So I got confidence in the players, man. I got confidence in the players coming up when they do. But I don't know if I don't know if the confidence is there right now with the managing of this team, and that goes from the development coaches to of some development coaches on this staff, and then also to the manager. But I know there's a lot of things that we don't know. There's information that's disclosed. At the end of the day, we don't really know who's calling the shots with the lineup. But we know who has to take the brunt of it, and that's Mike Matheny. And so, I want to see some changes after this. Maybe it comes after the road trip when they come back home, when the Royals come back home. But as of right now, you're 7 games behind first place out of Minnesota. I know expectations aren't to win a division, but you're getting into that part of the season, Kansas City, where now we're starting to see the separation between the top teams in this division and then who's going to be left out of the playoffs. And right now, fans just want a fighting shot for the Royals. Just want to see some fight. And right now, with the lineup that they put out each day, there's spots in it where there's not where that's going to leave fans wondering if the Royals are wanting to put up as much of a fight as the fans do with what's going on, because it makes a season so much longer when you're already out of it weeks before the All-Star break in July. So I think that there's decisions that can be made to help this team out a little bit more than what's been going on, but I don't know, man. It's one of those things where I want to see something different. I want to see something different. And that's putting more of the young guys out there and giving guys like Kyle Isbell more of a chance to earn a starting role in the lineup. It stinks that Olivares is now on the 10-day IL. IL? Yeah, because it's not the DL anymore.
Not a DL anymore.
So that's a bummer, but curious to see what his comeback is like. And then another big head-scratcher, but it's not really just a who's the next guy up, but when's this guy going to start up, and that's Whit Merrifield, man. Just when is it going to happen? When is he going to bounce? When is he going to bounce around and turn and make the season a lot better than what it's been so far in the first month for him?
I was listening on the way. I was driving around yesterday, so I had to hear game one, the first couple innings on the radio, and you bring up Whit Merrifield. Mike Sweeney was saying, hey, he was talking to Whit in the dugout, and Whit said that he doesn't look up at the scoreboard and panic. He feels like his hitting is going to come around at some point, and he's got a track record, right? We can't really doubt Whit Merrifield and say that, well, this will be his season the entire year. No, Whit Merrifield will catch fire eventually. We just didn't expect it to be this late in the season. But, yeah, it comes down to exactly what you said, Marco. I want to see changes. I'm not talking about production. Obviously, production is what you want. I don't need to sit here and spend 5 minutes going about how the offense needs to turn around. Well, yeah, no bleep that it does. It's roster moves. It's new guys there. It's new lineups. It's a new rotation. It's new spots for guys in the bullpen. Because what you've done through 25 games hasn't worked. You're 9-16. We'll see if they can get back on track today and take the series in Baltimore, as they will now have a first pitch. Just about 30 minutes away, Carlos Hernandez on the bump. He will go up against Tyler Wells of the Baltimore Orioles. When we come back here on The Shift, we'll recap what happened over the weekend with the Chiefs rookie minicamp. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We got to see a little bit of the rookies play the new rookies for the Kansas City Chiefs over the weekend. And, of course, we are all wanting to know what Trent McDuffie looked like, what George Karloftis looked like, Brian Cook, Leo Chenal. I go down the list. Isaiah Pacheco, Jalen Watson, Joshua Williams, Darian Kennard. All those guys, sure, those were the top guys we wanted to see. But Marco, I'll start it off by asking you this. Did you not notice a little bit of an emphasis on the Chiefs' social media account with Justin Ross?
Yeah, there was a little bit of little glimpses. I did see catch a little bit of video footage of him yesterday on the Chiefs' Twitter account. It's almost like they know what they're doing.
Well, I was going to say about that, or what I was going to say about that is, I don't think for an undrafted free agent, if you are being shown that much, that it's just going to be a cut at the end of this preseason. I think Justin Ross came into Kansas City and the Chiefs knew that not only is he going to make this roster, he's going to have some sort of impact. Right? Am I crazy in saying that?
Saying that he's going to make some kind of impact, or?
Well, that if the Chiefs are going to promote him like this, mm-hmm. right, they're not promoting him like every other undrafted free agent. Right? Those guys were barely even shown this weekend. But like guys like Isaiah Pacheco, who was a seventh round pick,
yeah,
and Justin Ross, I noticed a hell of a lot more than some of these other guys.
I think it's because, Justin Ross has been really the talk of the undrafted free agent signings that the Chiefs have had. And thus, like you said, he's been talked about more than some draft picks. And then Pacheco, I think that he says things that catches your attention. Like yesterday when he was asked about the pressure of what comes with wearing number 10, how he feels about wearing that number, especially coming in, filling the shoes of who once wore that number in Tyreek Hill. And I thought he gave a really great answer to what he had to that question, saying that he's had that number before in high school and college. Like, it's just going to be him. And then he really emphasizes about blocking for Patrick Mahomes. And that's been a thing that fans have noticed that is a kind of a lack in Clyde Edwards-Helaire's game, is that he's not a real good pass blocker for the quarterback. And then Justin Ross, of course, just the big storyline of how he fell out of the draft and nobody picked him. And now he's coming to Kansas City with already a with a Super Bowl winning quarterback and an elite offense that is going through a lot of changes this year. There's only three players on this team remaining from the Super Bowl 54 roster. So I think that right there, that those two guys, what the storylines going into camp, what they've said, and what they haven't said, Justin Ross, he's a man of very little words. He's there to really prove himself. If you listen to him talk, he's all business, which I like, because he knows where he knows that coming into this, he's got to prove himself at a different level than he did at Clemson in college football. So he's got something to prove, and so does Pacheco, too, who also got some looks as a kick returner yesterday. So I think that those two guys right there, they're really going to grab your attention if you're scrolling through Twitter and whatnot. So the Chiefs, kudos to the Chiefs social media team there, because they know how to feed their audience.
Certainly, and they know exactly the players that everybody's excited about. And Justin Ross is one of them. Obviously, the first-round draft picks are going to be talked about a lot, but even it's Jerrion Ealy, isn't it? Another guy up there with Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah, the
undrafted
miss.
Free agent. These feel like guys. I mean, I think Pacheco, he's going to get minimal snaps at the running back position, even in preseason. Because I think Pacheco and Ealy are going to be guys that are kick returners.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chiefs know with special teams that, man, if you are somebody that can make an impact there, hell, Marcus Kemp stayed on the roster for so damn long because of his ability to play on special teams. And they might feel like with a lot of these undrafted free agent guys, which is what I saw it felt like, when the Chiefs went through that period, with the exclusion of Justin Ross, because I think they did bring in Justin Ross to go, if he has a good preseason, we know the talent that he has, he can be an impact player this year for our wide receiver group. Now, he's not going to get the type of snaps like Mecole Hardman will. He probably will, if he makes the roster, split them with Josh Gordon, and that's if Josh Gordon makes the roster, by the way. I don't think it's a guarantee Josh Gordon does make the roster. They may have to decide between Justin Ross and Josh Gordon. I think they would lean towards Justin Ross because he's younger and maybe a better fit for this offensive scheming. But, yeah, the Chiefs know what they're doing, especially their social media team. And I think when they tweet out those videos, they know that these guys are going to be ones on the roster. I just have been shocked at the fact of how many there's been that were seventh-round draft picks, undrafted free agents. I mean, it's almost like a guarantee at this point, like Isaiah Pacheco makes the roster in some way. And it's almost a guarantee, it kind of feels like, that Justin Ross, if he stays healthy, makes this roster.
Yeah.
And, man, that's maybe more credit to Brett Veach. I mean, it wouldn't shock me in the slightest if we're watching Chiefs games a couple months from now and everybody's just falling in love with a guy like Isaiah Pacheco because he's returning kicks. You know, kind of has that Byron Pringle feel to him where he maybe has one kick return for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he makes an impact play on special teams. Maybe Justin Ross makes some big catches. Like Jody Fortson. Think about how quickly Kansas City fell in love with Jody Fortson, and he's had, what, one touchdown in his career? I mean, that's the great thing with guys that the Chiefs find is we have this insane expectation for them. And maybe, you know, the guy like Justin Ross, what's unfortunate for him is that he's an undrafted free agent. But everybody's looking at him right now as a first-round player, a first-round pick, because that's what we've all been told, is that if he didn't have that medical problem, he could have been a first-round pick. Not this year, because obviously he didn't put up the numbers, but where he was trending after his freshman year. I mean, his freshman year had 1,000 yards receiving, and he was the shining star when Clemson won the national championship. I mean, he torched Alabama. He torched everybody he played. And he's a big target. It's something Kansas City's not really used to. But with a lot of these guys, and what I was just trying to piece together, because it's a rookie minicamp. They're playing other rookies. They're not going up against other teams. They're not going up against the starting offensive line. Yeah. You know, there are certain things you can take away from, and I think we'll see that when training camp rolls around, when the preseason rolls around. But it's interesting to me because there wasn't much footage of guys like Jalen Watson, a seventh-round pick, some of the other undrafted free agents. You know, Darian Kennard was out there because he had blue hair, by the way, and he did tell the media that he plans to dye his hair red when the season starts, so his long, flowing, beautiful hair, it'll be bright red.
Right.
When I'm assuming he'll be the starting right tackle of the Chiefs, but even there wasn't much of Trent McDuffie. You know, Brian Cook, there's the exception there because he was dealing with a shoulder injury. You know, some guys were not partaking in being full participants in the rookie minicamp. That's fine. Don't want anybody to get banged up. But man, if you followed them on social media, you saw a lot of Justin Ross twice, actually. They showed his first day, this route he ran, looked explosive as hell. And then last night, to finish it up, they tweet out, "See you in the morning," or "See you next week, Kansas City." And it was another Justin Ross highlight.
Yeah.
So there's something going on there, and I think it's something that everybody in that front office knows, that they feel he's going to be healthy, and they feel like he is going to make an impact this year in Kansas City.
Yeah, and that medical staff over there with Chief Rick Burkholder, it's one of those things where when they have a track record like they do over there, you got a lot of confidence in the medical staff. And I know Brett Veach does because he's talked about it before, but man, I'll reiterate it because it's been said so many times, it's a low risk, high reward right now with Justin Ross. Hell, even if he makes the practice squad for a year, that's perfectly fine too, because that shows that, and if he could stay healthy what I want for him is just to be healthy for a whole year, no matter where he's at, whether it's practice squad or the 53-man roster.
You know, I'd be totally fine with the practice squad thing. And I think the good point, too, about this Chiefs offense is it is such a low-risk, high-reward thing because the Chiefs actually made moves to better their wide receiver group. When they lost Tyreek Hill, I mean, you bring in Juju, you bring in MVS, you have Mecole Hardman coming back, you let D-Rob walk, but they replaced them with guys that they feel pretty confident, Sky Moore, to name a few.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if Justin Ross is like the Chiefs' plan to like this sneaky undrafted free agents, like that's actually going to be our number three wide receiver, it would not be a low-risk, high-reward because he would be expected to do something. This year, I think we're expecting him to make a little bit of an impact, but again, it may be sort of that invest now and see what the value is 2 years down the road. You know, if Justin Ross is on this team for cheap, undrafted free agent, he's in the offense a little bit, but then you know when some of these guys walk, you know, because how many players are under contract for next year wide receiver group? Is it MVS? Hardman's not, Juju's not, Josh Gordon's not.
It would be
Sky Moore.
Yeah.
So Sky Moore and MVS. There's some spots open. If Justin Ross proves that he can stay healthy and he can still be that impact player that he was a couple years ago for Clemson, hell, you might have just had the find of the draft and he wasn't even selected. When we come back here on The Shift, we will finish up with some fact or fiction. You're listening to The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back into The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. I actually missed this. I was just telling Mark about it before we came back from break, but Jay Billis tweeted this out 58 minutes ago, saying, "So sad to hear that former Michigan State star Adrian Payne has passed away at the age of 31. AP was an outstanding player for Tom Izzo and befriended Lacey Holsworth through her battle with cancer. Rest in peace, Adrian Payne." And Lacey Holsworth was, if you remember back a couple of years ago, the Michigan State Spartan, she was that little girl that was on the sidelines a lot or behind the bench, and Adrian Payne kind of took her under a wing, basically. It made her feel very important as she was going through, obviously, a very, very tough time in her life, but she was actually there when Because Michigan State won in 2010. Oh, what year was it? 2009, I believe it was. Michigan State did win. So it was, that's when Adrienne Payne played for the Spartans, and she was actually up there when they ended up cutting down the nets. And she was able to stand up there with Adrienne Payne and hold the net that was cut off up in the air. So obviously heartbreaking and sad news, but Jay Billis tweeted that out, that former Michigan State star Adrienne Payne has passed away at the age of 31. I'm not sure yet of the cause, and with that, I'm not going to get into that or speculate anything. Just know that that is the horrible, horrible, sad breaking news of today. Because, man, you remember Adrienne Payne, don't you, Marco? You were saying it had been a while. I mean, it's been over a decade since he was there. But I definitely remember he was one of the stars of that great Spartans team.
Yeah, he was on, wasn't Draymond's team too, was it? Or Draymond?
Draymond, I think, was, gosh, it might have been around the same time. I'm not going to pull up exactly what year he was there at Michigan State, but I want to say it was like 2009 to 2011, maybe? No, it was 2010, 2014. So maybe he wasn't on the national championship Spartans team, but he was there all 4 years with Michigan State. Was also a first-round pick, went 15th overall in the 2014 NBA draft, played for the Minnesota Timberwolves, I believe, played for the Orlando Magic, last played in the NBA in 2017, also played for the Atlanta Hawks. That's who he was drafted by, but yeah, I remember him very well at Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
And you just, sometimes you think it's like, wow, they're already in their 30s, but obviously gone way, way, way too soon is the tragic news that Adrienne Payne, or at least Jay Billis tweeted this out an hour ago, that Adrienne Payne has passed away at the age of 31. Now we will switch into some fact or fiction to close out the show today. Five questions, five takes in under 5 minutes. Marco, fire away.
Jack, fact or fiction, Ryan O'Hearn is DFA'd before June.
That's too quick of a turnaround, because I think if Vinny Pasquantino was to be called up, they have to find a spot in the 40-man roster. So Ryan O'Hearn has taken up one of those spots. It would make sense. Man, maybe he would be. But I just don't know if Vinny Pasquantino is going to be called up before June. So I'll just go fiction for now, because I know the Royals just don't make moves like that. It's going to take a long time to do that, so I would definitely stick fiction.
Fact or fiction, Carlos Hernandez gets his first win of the season today.
I don't want to overreact to a rubber match against the Baltimore Orioles, where the Royals are 7 games under .500 and in fourth place in the American League Central, but boy, do they need it today. I said last week the Royals need to go 6-3 on this road trip. If they fall today, they're not going 6-3 on the road trip. They're not having a winning road trip, for that matter. You have to take advantage when you play bad teams like Baltimore. Gosh, maybe it's... I want to say yes, so I guess I will. I think Hernandez is due. He's due for a good start. I'll go fact on it.
Fact or fiction, Justin Ross has over 12.5 receptions this season.
Man, I'm going to go fiction on that. No, I don't know. With Tyreek Hill not there anymore, I mean, they're really going to spread around the ball. Maybe I'll stick optimistic. If I pick Carlos Hernandez to win a baseball game today, I'll go fact. I can take the over on Justin Ross with 12.5.
Fact or fiction, Isaiah Pacheco or Jerrion Ealy return a kickoff for a touchdown in the preseason?
Now, preseason football doesn't matter at all, except for those guys trying to make the roster. And I think the Chiefs will have the plan that both of them are going to try out at kick returner and they're going to try out at punt returner. There's no need to have Mecole Hardman back there. He's going to be your number two, number three wide receiver. It's the perfect time to use two of those guys there. Now, it's going to come down to probably who returns a kick, who has the most yards per kickoff return to get that starting job. I'm going to go fact. I think I got two guys there that one of them can return a kick. Though they're not likely, they're going to be taking every ball out of the end zone.
And lastly, fact or fiction, Nikola Jokic was deserving of the NBA MVP award this season.
I'm a Denver Nuggets fan, so I'm going to say fact on this. But also, being a KU alum, I wanted Joel Embiid to win it as well. I had two guys you couldn't go wrong with to win the MVP. But man, when you see Nikola Jokic play, he doesn't look like an MVP player. I mean, he's huge, he's slow, he's not built like Giannis Antetokounmpo or Joel Embiid for that matter, but he just puts up the numbers, man. I think he had over 27 points a game, over 13 rebounds a game, and then like over 7.5 assists per game.
He can dish it.
Ridiculous numbers. I think he is the best passing big man in the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
Could you argue it's close second? You can maybe count Giannis, but Giannis is in a league of his own. But Jokic, yeah, I'm saying absolutely fact. deserving of winning the NBA MVP award. But unfortunately, you know, he's probably sitting there and saying, yeah, MVP is great, but wanted Denver to obviously go further than what they did in the NBA postseason. There's Ray Charles, so it means it is time to go. That wraps up another edition of The Shift on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson, alongside Marco Marquez. We'll be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. You take it easy, Kansas City. I guess if you say so, I'll have to pack my things and go. That's right, hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more. What you say?